Greetings. My name is Blake Schmida alongside Leo Menchetti, and welcome to the American Valor Podcast. On the American Valor Podcast, supported by the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation, our goal is to educate and inspire with acts of valor that embody the traits which National Baseball Hall of Famer and United States Chief Petty Officer Bob Feller lived by. Citizenship, service above self, and commitment to country in a time of great national need. To our listeners,
welcome back to the American Valor Podcast, folks. I am your host, Blake Schmida, here, joined by Nicolette Rojo. And folks, today we have a very special guest, former player and current agent, Mike Milchen. Mike, welcome to the American Valor Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Blake.
All right, of course. And Mike, we are very excited to have you on here. And for those who don't know, Mike spent a bit of time in the MLB and certainly has enjoyed some great post-playing career success as well as an agent. Mike, would you mind sharing with our fans here just a brief background on your history in baseball?
Sure. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, where I went to high school at J.R. Tucker. I then went to Clemson University, where I played for 3 years before being drafted and signing with the St. Louis Cardinals. And I guess that was 1989. Prior to 89, I was lucky enough to try out and make a spot on the 1988 Olympic team, in which we played in Seoul, South Korea. Played about 8.5 years professionally, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. Was able to pitch in the big leagues with the Twins and Orioles. And then I turned to school after 8.5 years to finish my degree because as a junior, I was more of a athlete in the student athlete realm, Blake, the first time around. So had a ways to go, about a year and a half, but I did return to Clemson and finish my degree before I started my second career.
Well, that's great. You got a Tiger in the room. That's pretty awesome. Clemson has certainly enjoyed some success in Omaha, where I am from. Very familiar with their baseball team as of late. So I guess my first question would be for you. I think it's absolutely incredible that, you know, as a player, we'll start kind of from the top, that, you know, you got to play baseball at the international level, which a lot of people really don't get the chance to do. And, you know, you were considered a world champion. Congratulations. I know that was quite some time ago, but it's an honor to have you on the show. Do you have a favorite moment other than maybe lifting the trophy in Rome or Seoul from your time with the national team?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Blake. I would say without question, certainly the biggest honor and my favorite time as a baseball player was the summer and early fall of 1988, where I was lucky enough to play where the jersey said USA on the front of it. It was a really interesting time. I guess we, there were 64 people invited. We started at Millington, Tennessee. I believe we stayed in the Naval Barracks in Millington, which is where USA Baseball had a stadium back in the early days. And started from 64 and just kind of whittled it down. Our roster in Seoul was only 20, which seems awfully small. And so I was pretty fortunate because at Clemson, I was a dual position guy. So I played first and I also pitched. And by having such a small roster, I was able to fit my way onto that 20-man roster with some unbelievably talented and great players. It was an absolute blast. And, you know, guys in my generation, I think there were only three sophomores on that team in 88. All of the other 17 were either juniors or seniors in college. So most of those guys had been first round picks that June. So Tino Martinez at first and Ty Griffin, Robin Ventura, Ed Sprague, Andy Bennis was the first overall pick. Jim Abbott was a first round pick. I mean, you look around, it's just a bunch of first round picks. I think Major League Baseball had given players the option to, you know, participate and play on the Olympic team. And I think everybody chose to stay and play except for Greg Olson, who is the fourth overall pick, who signed with Baltimore and started pitching professionally. You know, my favorite moment was probably the entire summer because our generation of players, you know, everyone either had a parent that served in Vietnam or Korea. Most everyone had a grandparent that served in World War II. And we were a very spirited, patriotic bunch, if you can imagine that, Blake, bordering on a little bit of a circus atmosphere at times, if you can imagine that. And we just really enjoyed competing against the other countries and truly wanted to, you know, dominate people. And I think the fact that we were, you know, all thrilled to be a part of a squad that had USA on the front of their jerseys. It was a very different time, as I remember, playing against other countries. There was, you know, there was some tension, and we enjoyed that tension and trying to take it to the opposition. I can tell you that as I've gotten older, I've come to appreciate more some of the countries that we competed against. But as young college guys, we were ready to go every day.
Mike, that's an incredible story of all your teammates just coming from those military backgrounds, especially as a young adults playing for your country. So obviously you brought up several teammates that did come from, or they had either a service background or they had family with that background. Did you yourself happen to have any friends or family members that inspire you to be the best version of yourself and they did have a service background?
Yeah, so I appreciate the question. Several males in my life. So my father, who played football at Tennessee, was a Green Beret in Vietnam. I think he had a couple of tours of duty. My uncle was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. I do not believe that he served in Korea, but I could be mistaken. And my grandfather, who was a physician, was actually a doctor in the Army over in the Philippines during World War II. So three direct relatives on my side.
That's awesome, Mike. And, you know, I'm sure they, you know, got their taste of international travel just as much as you did, if not maybe more. And I'm a little curious from a player's perspective, what you thought the main difference, if there was one, or maybe main differences were between playing internationally versus Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I don't think that I would be qualified to really answer the question as it relates to the major leagues, Blake, just because, you know, by the time I was able to overcome a couple of elbow surgeries and three knee surgeries and some spotty performance, although I was a high pick by St. Louis, you know, I didn't play for 10 or 15 years in the big leagues. So I didn't really get to get settled in and, you know, sort of become a cornerstone of a club where I know when guys are able to do that, you know, it is really just about winning, right? For me, it was more about, you know, getting there and surviving, you know, sort of survival mode. So I think once you establish yourself in the big leagues, yes, it is it's a team sport, but obviously there's a bunch of different moving parts. The best players are going to stay. The players that aren't the best are not going to stay, and they'll find replacements for those guys. You know, professional baseball is, you know, it's a business, and you know, for a handful of major league players who are superstars, maybe it's easier for them not to look at it that way. But I can't really compare anything to my experience on the Olympic team, just because everybody wanted the same thing and you know, was willing to do whatever it took to accomplish our goal, which was to finish in first over in Seoul, which we were lucky enough to do. Nobody really cared what the lineup looked like or what the batting order was or who was starting the game on the mound. We all just wanted to have a W at the end of the game. And professional baseball is, it's a little bit different, you know, especially at the major league level, unless you're an established guy, which I never really got a chance to be.
That's a very good point about the game of baseball, how everyone does want to win. And either way, it's very great insight of yours throughout your playing career. Now, you brought up how you had a lot of injuries and a couple surgeries that slowed your, at least slowed, delayed the playing career a little bit. How were you able to bounce back from those tough injuries? Their physical therapy, et cetera?
Well, I was really lucky because Dr. Frank Jobe did both of my elbow surgeries, and what a special man that guy was. And Dr. Jobe certainly made it easy in terms of understanding what he was actually going to do and how he was going to perform the surgery. And what would be needed from a physical therapy perspective. So, you know, for me, being under Dr. Jobe's watchful eye was really a blessing. I know not everyone has a chance to see that guy. You know, the question's a really good one. I think that when I walked away from the game at, I think I was 29 years old, it wasn't because I was hurt. It wasn't because I couldn't perform. I think that the physical therapy and the rehab over a long period of time, it just wears on you and takes an awful lot of energy, you know, and it became, the game became not really something that I loved in terms of enjoying going to work every day, just because of all of the rehab. I did have three knee scopes, which were just they weren't difficult. They were just meniscus tears. The two elbow surgeries were obviously time consuming and difficult to come back from. But you know, as a player, I guess you just, you know, one day at a time and put your head down and go to work, and you hope that, you know, everything heals and you get your strength and flexibility back and you're able to compete. I don't really think there's any other option other than, you know, changing course and finding another job, because I think if you want to play, you know, you really have no choice but to just do the work.
And as a former athlete myself, we both athletes, actually, we understand. For me, I played a little bit in college prior to an injury. I didn't tear my meniscus or injure my elbow, but for me, it was my lower back. I was a basketball player, and I totally understand that, how even with therapy, you just have to do it. And
right.
Something that I've actually talked to, because I'm a post-grad, I just finished my master's degree a couple months ago. And something that, thank you so much, Mike. Thank you. Something that I've brought up, that I've talked to former athletes, whether they were currently in college or they were done high school, etc. I've noticed the common conversations that was brought up was transitioning from going to practice, playing club ball if you're in high school / college travel ball, even summer league ball for baseball. And once they leave, whether it's due to injury or just simply graduation, they have that struggle of, okay, what's next? Or what's next for career-wise or opportunities for just life? I guess really my question is, what advice do you have for those student athletes, or even just athletes who are in minor leagues and they're not students, for those who are currently trying to adjust to life after sports?
It's really tough. I think it's a great question. You know, for me, I think that, and you know this, because I don't think anyone can really be an athlete and not be competitive. And I think that, at least speaking for myself, I think deep down, people that play, you know, whatever sport it is, basketball, hockey, football, baseball, swimming, you name it. I think we all just want to be good. We want to see how good we can get, right? And we're constantly trying to push ourselves to continually improve. And for me, the advice that I give young people, and I do get calls occasionally, usually kids of friends or one of my players will have, you know, a former college teammate or high school friend or what have you. And, you know, my advice, honestly, is just to make yourself really busy. Find something to do that you can be productive at from a work perspective, unless you have obviously school left to accomplish, or you're working on an undergrad or a master's or any type of postgraduate degree. Is find something to do and get after it and get busy, because I think that oftentimes it is a daunting thought, okay, what am I going to do now? When if we would just do something, even if it's volunteer work, it's funny how it leads us to something that we might be really good at or something that we would love to do. And when I returned to Clemson, I had about a year and a half of school just to get my undergraduate degree. And here comes this 29 and 30 year old, you know, undergrad student sitting in front of the classroom with slacks on and a collared shirt, dress shoes. I'm sure people thought I was the teacher, or, you know, maybe the graduate assistant or whatever. It was a very humbling experience. So I had about a year and a half, and I did not. Bobby Robinson was the athletic director at Clemson at the time, and Bobby asked me if I wanted to do anything with the baseball team or athletic department. And honestly, I declined. And I just told Bobby, hey, listen, I think I need a little bit of a break from baseball. I really wanted to kind of get away from the game for a little bit and just work on finishing my degree and taking my classes very seriously. And that's the only thing I really regret about returning to school is I wish I would have been able to do something or done something in the athletic department in whatever capacity, handing out programs at basketball games or just whatever it might be, because I'm sure that I would have met people that could have led me to something else. And so I think we get worked up sometimes and we're looking for either an answer, which we don't have as to what we would do next, or we're looking for the perfect job when for me, it is, hey, just find something to do and stay busy. My oldest son, who played baseball at the University of Florida, actually had a couple of Tommy John surgeries himself as a pitcher and, you know, had a tough time physically, although he's a really talented guy. He graduated in 3.5 years with his economics degree, got his master's in sports administration, was working on another master's because he got 2 extra years of school because of the injuries. And so he decided that he wanted to get to work. I think he had enough, similar to what I had mentioned earlier with, you know, the rehab and constantly having to, you know, put in 2 or 3 hours daily on just, you know, making sure you're healthy to play. And my advice to him was, hey, listen, just find something to do. Find a job. Doesn't matter really what it is. And it'll lead you to something else. And recently he was hired by Morgan Stanley. So he'll start, I think he starts in a week or 10 days or something like that. But, you know, that was the same advice that I gave, you know, one of my own kids, which is find something to do. And it'll lead you to other things that you'll really be productive and enjoy doing. But for me, the competitiveness that we have as athletes, for all, you know, men and women, I mean, hey, for me, that just carries over to your professional life. It's no different than what you were doing on the basketball court or what I was doing on the baseball field. I think people who like to compete are going to be pretty good at whatever they do.
Mike, I love how you have related, you know, your kind of path to post-playing career to your son's. Congratulations to him out there on his first job out of college at Morgan Stanley. I know I just enjoyed that myself recently, so I know what kind of weight that can be off his shoulders. Congrats to him. But Mike, I want to get a little bit more specific. I know that you are a player representative at ISE. And it sounds like, you know, you had a good idea after your playing career, you wanted to go back to school, but at what point did you know you wanted to be an agent specifically in your post?
I don't think I ever, thought I wanted to be an agent. So what happened, Blake, was, so I go back to school and, as I'm getting close to graduation, I reached out to the guys that represented me, as a player. It was Randy and Alan Hendricks. At the time, it was Hendricks Sports Management. They sold their business to the SFX Sports Group. I want to say that was like 1999 when that transaction happened, which was about the time I was going to be set to graduate. So back before cell phones and the internet and everything else, I reached out to Randy and Alan, and I asked them if they would mail me, all of the general managers and farm directors, and I think scouting directors of all major league organizations, so I could send them resumes. Because Blake, of course, I thought that, you know, by simply going back to Clemson and getting an undergraduate degree with zero work experience. And I mean zero, outside of maybe, you know, being a part-time lifeguard as a 15-year-old or, you know, whatever, right? Zero work experience. I figured that I would certainly, you know, become an assistant general manager of a major league team pretty quickly, or just if not right out of school, right? Well, they sent me all of the names and addresses for me to mail my resume, which I'm sure was trash, to all 30 clubs. And I appreciated them sending that to me. And on the phone one day, I think it was Alan Hendricks, said, hey, would you send us a resume as well? We'd like to take a look at it. And I said, well, you know, Alan, you've known me for, you know, 10 or 11 years. I'm not sure I need to really send you a resume. There's not anything on it anyway. He said, no, we'd like to see it. You know, we think you might be good at this job. And I said, okay. So I sent him a resume, and, you know, the process for me, I think there were about 14 teams that, you know, responded to my letters, which I thought was pretty good. And, you know, had conversations, I think maybe with, you know, three or five of them. Well, there was a man named Dave Littlefield who was the assistant general manager of the Florida Marlins. I think Dave Dombrowski was the general manager at the time. Dave was the guy that recruited me to go to Clemson. Dave was the recruiting coordinator at Clemson when I committed to go to school there. So obviously Dave knew me very well. And we had a couple of conversations about possibly going to work for the Marlins. And so I asked Dave what, in what capacity would you envision me working for the Marlins? And he said, well, you know, do you want to scout or do you want to coach? And I said, well, I don't really want to do either. I'd like to be a general manager. And he kind of laughs and he says, well, you know, you just don't start out as the general manager, Mike. I don't know if you know that or not, but, you know, most front office people, now this was back a while ago, come from either scouting or player development, sometimes both. And I said, oh, I didn't realize that. And I certainly didn't want to coach, wasn't sure about scouting. And at about the same time, I had a couple more conversations with Randy and Allen, Hendricks in Houston. And so I was going to go down and interview in person with the Marlins, and I was pretty confident I was going to get some sort of job if I went down to meet with Dave Littlefield and those guys. And I was very surprised at, you know, what entry level salaries were for what I was going to be doing. Meaning I thought that they were somewhat low. And Randy and Alan Hendricks, when we got into a deeper conversation, they asked if I'd fly out to Houston and sit down with them, which I did. And, you know, the entry salary for that position was relatively comparable to what I would be making on the club side, which I was a little bit surprised at. I guess I had a real misunderstanding of the real world, right? And workforce, which was clearly on me. And so I didn't know what guys that represented players do. Really had no idea what went into it or what they did on a daily basis, et cetera. And so in the end, I decided that I was going to go the route of trying to establish myself as a guy that represents players because I felt like I could control my own destiny a lot better than I could if I was on the club side. And I also felt like that, depending on how hard I worked and how good I was, I could better control what I would make potentially representing players as opposed to the club side, because oftentimes, you know, depending on who guys are hired by on the club side, if the general manager gets fired, well, those guys that the GM hired, those guys also get fired regardless of how well or how good they are at their jobs, right? And I think that's something for me that is incredibly unfair, because there's lots of guys and girls and Major League Baseball that are really good at what they do, but because they were hired by a certain front office, if that individual gets fired, then they end up losing their jobs too. So it was really by happen chance, Blake, and probably a little bit of luck, because it wasn't on my mind whatsoever that I would one day represent players. Randy Now and Hendricks just happened to bring it up when I had called them about getting mailing addresses for the teams.
As a sport management, that was where I got my master's degree in. Student, everything you said is not only spot on, but it was definitely a big wake-up call for myself and other students, and I can go on and on and on about that topic for another time. And it is so very true about, especially with how times have changed. And yes, I'm not that young and I'm not that old, but I do remember somewhat the old school way of not me sending it in because I was only a kid, but I do remember the old school style of contact.
Yeah.
Now, as we've heard, your career from on the agency side has lasted a little while now. From that perspective, over time since you started up until 2022, now that will be in 2023 in a few months, how has the game of baseball, not just the playing side of baseball, but on the business side as well, how have they changed since you joined the agency side of the sports industry?
Well, it's a good question. I think there's a lot of different things that, you know, have changed from my perspective, and the way that I look at the world and players is, it's pretty simple. It's in the sport of baseball, it's not basketball, it's not football, it's not track and field, it's not golf, it's not tennis, it's not hockey. Baseball players are not making, you know, $200 million on a shoe deal, right? You know, outside of New York, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, you know, really big markets, players are really going to be successful based on how they perform on the field. And I think that we have so many distractions now as it relates to social media and other things that oftentimes players lose track of what's actually important, if that makes sense. So, you know, for me, that has remained a constant. Now, if guys are going to start making $100 million for shoe deals, then certainly, you know, it won't necessarily be just based on performance. I don't know enough about the NBA really to talk about anything related to shoe deals and, you know, which guys have, you know, the biggest shoe deals and what's the term on those contracts and, you know, are there stipulations attached to the contract based on which teams they're playing for, if they request a trade or if they get traded or they get released. I'm certainly no expert on that. But in the game of baseball, for me, it's about performance. And it's always been that way. On the club side, I think that, unfortunately, we don't have 30 teams that are necessarily trying to win. When I first started, which was 21 years ago, I think 1999, so maybe that's 23 years now, 22 and a half. It was very different because every team wanted to win. Losing was obviously frowned upon. And I think because of the success of the Chicago Cubs sort of tearing down and rebuilding and, you know, acquiring a bunch of prospects as assets and winning a world championship and then watching the Astros do the same thing. You know, the Orioles look like they're on the rise now. You know, I just don't think that every team is in baseball is trying to put the best players available on the field every day. And I think that there are long-term plans to try and win, although that might mean temporarily that there'd be a bunch of losses, right? And I can tell you this with, you know, most of my major league free agents in today's game, my philosophy is that I want to find teams that have the best chance to win and want to win, who have interest in a particular player. For me, that oftentimes will trump even dollars because of this reason. If a player signs with a team that wants to win and thinks they have a chance to win, and that player performs, well, guess what? He's going to play every day, right? They're trying to win. They're going to put the best players on the field every day. If players sign with teams that aren't necessarily trying to win, he might be the best player on the field or on the club, but he won't necessarily play every day, right? It didn't used to be that way. You know, I think oftentimes, you know, free agency in years past was, you know, guys are looking for typically the best deal or, you know, one with the longest term, or what have you. In today's world, I think it's very tricky, you know, because unless it's, you know, deal with significant length, you know, you're gonna, or unless it's your last contract, I think you have to be careful for what you sign up for, because if it's about performance and you don't play, then obviously, you'll be less attractive as a free agent the following year. So I think that from the player's perspective or from my perspective, things are very similar. It's about performance. But from the club side, I think things are different based on not everybody truly trying to win. I know nobody will admit that because, you know, we're not going to upset the fans and we're trying to sell season tickets, et cetera. But that's the reality. I think the other thing that obviously is in every sport now are analytics. I think that some teams more so than others. I think some teams understand analytics better than others. I think the best teams understand that analytics are what happened yesterday, not what's going to happen next Thursday. And I think the most successful teams understand that analytics are part of a large sample size. So that's how Vegas makes money, right? Large sample size. But what if the three of us walk into a casino? Does that large sample size actually tell us what's going to happen on one night if the three of us are gambling? It does not. But if we go there 100,000 times, we probably fit into the large sample size. So I think that the analytics and the big sample sizes are less valuable in the postseason than they are during the regular season. And I think if you take a really close look at teams, some of them win in postseason, some don't. I think that some mistakenly look at the postseason just like the regular season. But like I pointed out earlier, large sample sizes are different in the playoffs because now we're talking about small sample sizes. So I would say the economics are different, and I would say the analytic portion being a big part of the game, certainly in terms of decision making and other things for teams, are the two biggest things that I would say are different than when, you know, I first started in 1999.
You know, and from a fan perspective, somebody who doesn't have the insider, knowledge that someone like you or from the club side might have, I think those things kind of are evident. You know, I don't think anybody can truly admit that, certain teams aren't trying to lose now to win in the future. But, you know, Mike, that we could go on and on and on about the baseball side of things now, but we definitely appreciate your insight. It was incredible to kind of hear from a new perspective, something that I hadn't, a side that I hadn't heard from. I know one of your clients is Justin Verlander. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, he's enjoying a career year. So congrats to you and him for that. But Mike, I appreciate you coming on the show here.
And
you've been an incredible guest and given us, as both, recent graduates who are, interested in the sports side. We've certainly heard a lot of things echoed and taken a lot away from this, as co-hosts. So we appreciate you coming on, Mike.
Yes, we do.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I wish you guys certainly the best of luck. And, from the perspective that I have with Peter Fertig and the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award, it has been very special for me to get to know Peter and follow the awards annually. And I don't think that you guys get the recognition and credit. And I wish that we would have a Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Day in Major League Baseball, just like we honor and celebrate other things in Major League Baseball. I would like to see that be a part of a regular season day across the game of baseball, because if there is any group of people that certainly deserve that, for me, it's those that have served and given us the opportunity to live in the best country in the world, and certainly have a chance to do what we do daily with their freedom. So thank you for that.
We appreciate that. And I think that's something we here at the foundation would love to see. And I'm glad that you brought things back around to Bob to wrap things up. And we appreciate your support and everyone's listening support. So Mike, thank you for coming on. Thank you for your support of the foundation. And it's been awesome.
Well, thank you, Blake. Thank you, Nicolette. I appreciate your time and wish you guys the best of luck.
This concludes this episode of the American Valor Podcast. This conversation is brought to you by the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation, the Department of the Navy, Major League Baseball, USAA, BWXT, Huntington Ingalls, and the Cleveland Guardians. Please feel free to leave your comments in the comment section below and connect with the Bob Feller Act of Valor Award Foundation on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Act of Valor Award. You can engage with the foundation at activevaloraward.org. There, you can learn more about Bob Feller, Jerry Coleman, recent nominees of the awards, view pictures, and sign up for updates, including the American Valor podcast and more. For Blake Schmida, Leo Manchetti, and everyone at the American Valor podcast, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.